Okay, thank you.
All right, go ahead and call the PDEC meeting to order, the EW extension items first on the agenda here. Pam, do we have compliance with the Wisconsin Open Meetings Law?
We are in compliance, yes.
Perfect. And item number two, our featured program, is Carolyn.
Okay, I'm here to talk about 4-H again. And I've heard that, yes, we know what the 4-H's are, but we're taking a different route tonight to talk about.
Hi, don't worry,
oh.
We will be over there by 7, should be done by 7:30. That's the short agenda. Mike, do you really? Is that fair, 7:30?
Yes, more than fair.
Okay.
Shoot for better than that, so.
It's Ed that always holds it up, so he'll talk to me.
Thanks.
I might hear the word health from you, I don't know. Health.
Okay, so this is the Iowa State University, you can see, targeting life skills model. I really love this model, however, it is so busy. Like, you look at it and it's like, there's too much information on this page. So if we could just look at the center, your target there, you've got on the outside are 4 H's, heart, hands, head, and health. And then that breaks that down into different categories. With our heart, we relate and we care. With our hands, we give and we work. With our health, we live and we are. And with our head, we're managing and thinking. Now, I'm not going to go over all of these little pizza slices tonight, but the ones in yellow, I'm going to talk about, and then maybe the next time I present to you, I'm going to fill in the pie a little more, and so eventually we'll see how all of these skills are learned in 4-H. Not the whole pie tonight. No. So can I ask, for show of hands, how many of you went to the Kenosha County Fair? And if you didn't go, can I ask why you didn't go? No one's okay, we'll leave it at that.
I guess that was a bad question.
Okay, that was to make you feel guilty.
Some people didn't know about it.
Okay, so I know the last time I presented, one of the things I talked about is the 4-H is not the fair. And I talked about how 4-H really doesn't have a say in how the fair is run. We don't make up the rules, but there is quite a partnership between the two of us. And I can say that 4-H is not the fair, but I think Shelley will agree, if we didn't have the 4-H kids, we wouldn't have much of a fair. So tonight, I'm just going to go through some of these pie pieces and show you on the screen here how they related to the fair. Okay, so my presentation, what can be learned at the county fair. Okay, we've got goal setting, planning, and organizing. In these pictures, you'll see our rocketry program. For some youth, they only join 4-H because they want to show at the fair, which is a little frustrating, but I guess it's a good hook to get them into the program, and then they learn these life skills that they might not even, you know, realize that they're learning at the time. And then our 4-H leaders help meet that goal by igniting the sparks that the kids have and teaching knowledge and skills so they can get to the fair and meet their goals. The girl up at the top there, she's in the planning phase of building her rocket. Our rocketry program starts in February, I believe, with kind of the indoor building, and this is, you know, how you do it. And then they shoot several times throughout the summer. This boy down here, his rocket broke apart on the launch pad, but he's still smiling. Greg Kunkel is our shooting sports leader too, but our rocketry leader, and he just stresses having fun, trying and trying again.
Where did it launch from?
The Kenosha County Fairgrounds.
Yeah, the fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have resiliency. Youth learn to keep going even when things don't go as planned. They have to have determination to meet their goal. The reason I chose the beef project, were you there? No. These beef were so sassy during their show, and they were all really agitated animals, work each other up. And
be agitated too.
Yeah. Yeah. So some of them were kind of like pulling the kids along instead of the kids. So I don't have his name, but the judge at the beef show, I was writing down his quotes because he said he really had to hand it to the kids. He said, these kids are working hard, they're trying to learn, and no one gave up. So he was impressed in how they handled that little bit of adversity. Okay, we have contributions to a group effort, teamwork, and marketable skills. The 4-H has a pop and pizza stand, they call it, and parents and leaders and youth kind of all work together to raise money for that. On the left, you'll see our little clover buds. They obviously aren't a huge help in the pop and pizza stand, but they are great at advertising outside, so they've got their pizza and ice cream outfits on. And then as the youth get a little bit older, then they're doing some counter service. They may be running for drinks, and then older, you know, are doing ice cream machines and things like that. The Poppin' Pizza stand, they ran out of pizza by Sunday, and they made almost $8,000 for 4-H. This here, I didn't get to see, but this is Battle of the Barns, and each barn makes its own, what do you call it, kind of a gift basket. And then those are auctioned off again, and that money goes to the fair, correct? Yeah, that money goes back to them. But again, all of the kids are working together. Sometimes they'll use the project money to buy items. Other times, one family will donate something, another will donate another. But it's just kind of a neat thing, and the kids walk around and do that. Do you know how much they raised for the fair?
Oh, no, I wasn't there.
Sorry, and I'm putting Shelly on the spot. She didn't know she was going to be my guest speaker as co-presenter tonight. Okay, so this is our archery and shooting sports, as you see. For archery and shooting sports, they do not compete against each other. So basically, they start out at the beginning of the season, and they just try to get better. They come out, you know, there's usually shooting opportunities every week. They can do that, they keep track of their scores throughout the season, and then, like on the Sunday before the fair, there's a fair shoot. And camera here, oh my goodness, I saw that. five bullseyes there, they shoot five arrows. And this was on a display in the archery section. It says, archery is not about being better than anyone else, it's about being better than you used to be. So that's kind of that self-motivation to keep working at it and try to improve yourself. Okay, we've got self-responsibility. Here we go. It says most youth in animal projects get their animals when they are very young. They obviously are taking care of their physical needs, but in order to show well at the fair, you've got to kind of have a, I don't know if I want to say emotional bond, or do you say with your animal, but as far as that animal trusting you and how, you know, you're going to get along, and obviously the more relaxed they are with you, then the better they'll show at the fair. Regardless, not just animal projects, all youth are expected to have all their exhibits finished, not glue drying, before they get to the fair, and to talk about that to the judges and other guests that go through the building. Managing feelings. This is the slide where y'all go, aww. But I just touched on the many feelings that youth encounter. A lot of them, I'm sure, are very nervous about speaking in public and speaking to judges. I do have to say that I was really impressed, though, as I was walking around watching some of the judging. They didn't show it. And the younger ones, the Clover Buds, they're excited to talk about their projects. But it's kind of neat to start that at a young age, because then that helps get over the nervousness later. So there's kids that are happy and thrilled when they win their blue ribbon, but maybe disappointed when they don't win anything at all. They have pride in their own achievements, excited beyond belief about spending all week with their friends. I put this on for the swine. Anger when they don't make weight, which is terrible, but do you all know about weighing in at the county fair? Okay. So in order to sell, Shelly can correct me if I'm wrong, your swine has to weigh between 225 and 295. And if they don't fall in that price or in that weight, you cannot sell them. So we had one come up, I think, 2 pounds short, which they put all that time, money, investment, food, and they have no recoup out of it.
Oh.
Yeah.
They want to put their foot on a scale.
Yeah. And so you can see that's very, it can trigger anger, disappointment, sadness. We had one go 5 pounds over, and they probably regretted giving that one last meal to them. But you do, like, you watch the scale.
They should have flipped. Yeah. The one that was too light.
Yeah, but it can be heartbreaking to see. Okay, so we have empathy with situations of their fellow 4-H'ers. I really do feel like most of them really understand what the other one is going through, and so they can be happy for them that they're doing well. But if they're not, you know, I haven't seen any open, you know, making fun or, you know, belittling them for, they usually try to be very, very supportive of each other. And then we have sorrow with saying goodbye to the animals, because a lot of the animals don't come home again. Swine never come home, and so it's always sad for some of the kids to say goodbye to them. Social skills. All youth starting in age kindergarten, K-5 through 13th grade, start talking about their projects with the judge. In practicing for judging, I know, like, even the Clover Buds practice, you're taught to make eye contact and listen to your judges. Most of the judges do talk to the kids and have tips for them and information that they might be able to use later, but they're also asking them about their animal as well, so the kids are expected to know their stuff. You speak with the public while answering questions about their projects. Up here we have supervising at the petting zoo. These two kids are their judges here, and this man, the goat judge, he ran a full clinic while everyone was there. That judging took a long time, but the kids probably learned more from it. And I have to show this picture up here. One of these ladies, they may have both been, was in their 80s, and they came in and they told, I've always wanted to pet a rabbit. I've always. And so this girl went out, she got her rabbit out of the cage and brought it over, and the lady was just thrilled that finally, by age 80, she had met one of her bucket list items by petting that rabbit. Cooperation, 4-H youth, prepare the fairgrounds. The Sunday before the fair starts, all of the youth are there in the morning cleaning the barns, getting ready, cleaning the grounds. The fishing project has to clean out the pond that's there. So even though the fair is technically for you all Wednesday to Sunday, it starts the Sunday before getting that ready. 4-H youth and animal projects are expected to take barn duty shifts, are expected to keep the barns clean, interact, answer questions from the fairgoers, and of course keep the animals fed and watered. And 4-H youth are expected to take turns hosting the exhibition building. There's two buildings that have fair projects in them that are not animal related. And so youth from different clubs go in there to make sure that no one's grabbing the projects, taking care of them, but also, again, answering questions and just saying hi We have a Clover booth that's all talking about 4-H if people don't know and want more information. We've got our material there, and then again, serving in the pop and pizza stand. So it's not all fun and games. The youth work hard during Fair Week. And then I have sharing, nurturing, and empathy. And sharing up in the corner is just, again, those same experiences that they're all going through so they can, you know, share their feelings. This is our fishing project here, and I included this picture because it has the leaders in it. Without our leaders, our kids, they would go to the fair, but they wouldn't go as prepared as without our leaders, so I really appreciate them. The other reason I included this dairy picture is because we've got, you can see the older girls in the back and then the younger girl and boy in the front. And I didn't write down her exact quotes, but I had a mom tell me one of the things they appreciated about 4-H was, you're all together at a common interest. There's not, it doesn't matter if it's a popular crowd or the non-popular crowd, a cheerleader or, you know, a computer person. It's like they all unite under common interest. So I just think that's kind of special, you know, that there's not that classification necessarily. And these are just some quotes I got from the kids. This is Ariel at the end, and she is a clover bud, obviously. She said 4-H means having a blast, being a clover bud, and doing projects. She is talking to one of our ambassadors. Our ambassadors are some of our high school students, and they are the ones that talk to the clover buds about judging, because it just, you know, is a little easier to start out, and it gives the ambassadors a good experience too. This says Bella in the middle, 4-H and fair means it's not about winning, it's about having fun while learning. I should tell you that Bella got 2 blue ribbons on her turkey, so maybe it's about both for her, I don't know. And Carly, 4-H and fair means getting a life experience and a great opportunity. Finally, I had a grandma contact me, and this is her quote. Such a wonderful way for youngsters to gain confidence while exploring creativity. And this is her granddaughter doing her judging. So you can kind of see, it's a busy model, but it kind of breaks everything down, and you can see that since it is targeting life skills, that the fair does do that for the kids. So it's a wonderful experience for them. And then I have important dates for you. We're starting the new 4-H year, 23-24, on October 1st. And mark it on your calendars. The fair next year starts August 14th. So you'll all be prepared, you've all been warned. And I did bring along some new marketing material we have. I know some of you have said, you know, you might want something to take long to tell about 4-H, so I'll put that on the table over there later for you to see. But we're getting excited. Open house is September 26th, and that's here at the KCC. All the projects and the clubs have a little table that the families can go around to get more information. So, gearing up. Does anyone have any questions about how wonderful the fair was? You can address them to me or Shelley. Yes.
With things like the shooting sports and rockets, mm-hmm. Are all like the equipment supplied for the youngsters, or do you have to have your own?
Yes. No, shooting sports, they are provided, and all of your ammo, targets, everything. Archery is also provided for them. And rocketry, you do buy your own rocket. But Greg oftentimes, I don't think it's your son in the, what was he in it? But he brings these huge cases in, and he's got tools and glue and, you know, just all kinds of things that the kids really don't need to buy a whole lot. There are a few rockets that they don't even have to buy a kit. They show how to make it, you know, just from home, things you have at home. But yes, as far as the shooting boards, everything is provided for the kids.
Start with your paper towel holder for the roll.
What's that?
Start with your paper towel roll. Makes a great rocket.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a division in the fair. I've never seen it, but you make an edible rocket. I didn't see if anyone did that this year. But there's there's all kinds of things that kids can do.
The reason I ask where they launch from, mm-hmm. Bong has a model rocketry area.
Oh.
And they launch monsters.
Oh, okay. I will have to tell Greg that.
So mm-hmm. that would be an experience for those kids to go out there.
Yeah.
They're rockets.
Okay. Yeah, I would definitely mention that. Thank you for letting me tell you about the excitement.
No,
my colleagues
exciting.
Will tell you, I love the fair. And so, yes, they were gracious enough to listen to all my stories all week.
No, it's important for the youth. I was not in 4-H, but I knew a lot of people that were, and I know what it does for the folks that are in it. My daughter was in it for a little bit. She did cake decorating and photography. So it doesn't, not everything's about the fair.
Right.
But it is a big part of it. So.
And we do keep trying to add more projects that are not animal related, and we're about half and half now. We're adding two this year that our foods program is coming back, and we're going to be able to partner with Central. They're going to let us use their kitchens over there. And then we're having outdoor adventures, and it's just to learn about being outdoors, camping skills, or hiking skills. Trying to appeal to kids who don't have the animals and things that you have to have for 4-H.
Okay. Sounds good. Any other questions? All right. Got a quiet crowd tonight here. So, Pam, are you next or who's next?
Well, educator updates are next. So, Mary, am I right?
Sure.
Go down and around.
Yeah, I'm gonna look at my notes.
Oh, do.
So in August, I co-facilitated a financial education program with the Kenosha Housing Authority for people that participate in their family self-sufficiency program. And this was to give them more information about a home buying grant that the Housing Authority has available to people, as well as credit building. And then also, you've heard me talk multiple times probably about the mental health first aid and the youth mental health first aid trainings that have been available statewide from the grant funding that Extension received. So that is actually wrapping up this quarter, and at this point there have been, you know, dozens of trainings made available at different days of the week and times and all of that since we were working as a statewide team, but then still able to offer it to all of our community members, no matter, you know, who's teaching it location-wise. So as all of the last data and information gets compiled, in the future I'll be able to share kind of what came of all of it. I'll still be able to provide the training. It's just going to be more of figuring out different ways to help with the financial piece, or if it would be exploring charging participants to attend. So
the grant is, like, you come to the end of the grant?
Yes. Yeah. So at this point, there are trainings that are through the end of this month, and that was the end of it.
Have you had good participation?
Yes. Yeah, very good. The only tricky thing, and this is similar of any free program, is you get a higher no-show rate just because there's not the buy-in of, like, your money. But usually it would be, we would over-register. I mean, after a couple of rounds of, like, wow, a bunch of people didn't show up, we would over-register, and then it would even out, so we'd still get about 20, 25 in a class.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All
right. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
I saw the $1 million from Uline that went in. Are you associated to that at all for housing?
Not anything specifically at this point, but I know as it starts to get put together, it sounds like there might be like a program for a subsidy type of thing for pieces of it. Yeah, so I mean, that would be a good piece to use elements of financial education. Not necessarily our tenant education program, but there are pieces of that that still talk about home maintenance and communication and some of the other, like, budget things.
So opportunity for collaboration.
Yes. Yep.
Alrighty, I was gonna say, I know there are some people I haven't met in the room yet. I'm Savannah, I'm the new community development educator. I started in July. You actually, some of you met me my first week. That was my first PDAC meeting. I'm still fairly new, so I haven't started any programs yet. However, I've been kind of starting to take on some different roles. So I'm gonna be technically the UW Extension pinpoint person for the broadband expansion here in Kenosha County too. So I've been starting to go to those board meetings. I also have been working with our planning and development area with the housing and affordable housing things as well. And they're talking about kind of starting up a housing pretty much focus group, something of that nature, but they're gonna do it with CAVA. However, the new CAVA president also started the same day I did, so that probably is a few months out still. And then two other things, I have started kind of taking over the UW Extension social media for Kenosha County, so keep an eye out. We're gonna be doing that. We'll also be updating our website next month. Carolyn put so much time and effort into getting all this stuff out for the 4-H open house and stuff too, so we didn't want to mess with that, but as soon as that's all over, we're gonna kind of update that website to make it just more updated. It's a little out of date right now, so really trying to appeal to people through social media and the internet as well. And then finally, I am working on trying to bring something called Homegrown that UW Extension has piloted over the past few years, and it is about bringing entrepreneurship into your community. So it's pretty much learning about entrepreneurship for not entrepreneurs in your community. So I'm kind of starting conversations with that right now. I have a pilot that I'm watching the rest of this week, and we're gonna start conversations with Extension and community members to see how we can bring that in. And hopefully I'm aiming to bring it to the community, or at least parts of the community, hopefully more west of the eye, starting in either December or January.
So I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, you will. I will be there tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Savannah, and nice to meet you.
Nice
I wasn't at the last meeting, so just meet you now.
All right, I'll go next.
Sure.
On behalf of Foodwise, I finished a series of nutrition education at the Boys and Girls Club here in Kenosha. Usually when we start out, we ask who would like to join, whereas this time when I walked in the class, teacher asked me, how many, what's the number for minimum? I said, minimum is 5 students. He's like, everybody go there. And it was a class of like 30 students or more, in and out. It was great. At the end, students were very happy. They had fun making a variety of recipes and learning about new things. So that was a good experience. This is my third year teaching at the Boys and Girls Club. Other than that, I would give you some updates on other educators, what they've done throughout this past month. We had colleagues working a Strong Bodies curriculum at the Assisi Homes, then Food Smarts at Kenosha Achievement Center, Seniors Eating Well at Saxony Manor, Teen Cuisine at Hawthorne Hollow, and some education at Shalom Center. I will pass this around so you can see the recipes that were made at the Shalom Center from one of our colleagues, Fabiola. Also, Urban League of Racine and Kenosha had an event this past weekend in Racine. It was called Racine Lakefront Expo. They had vendors from all over. Where we were providing the community with our resources. So I am currently working with Urban League to start a fatherhood program where I would like, and this has been my goal for a long time, to recruit fathers in the community and educate them about nutrition. I feel like that's very important for fathers, because that's how they would bond better with their family members and learn about nutrition. So that's one of my goals. Another project that I'm currently working is creating connections with a church here in Kenosha. It's called New Jerusalem Church. I don't know if anyone is familiar with that. They are planning to start to do a women's health seminar. They want to start bringing education to their community. So they reached out to us, and I've been working with them to have an education event where we can present a nutrition topic, and from there, perhaps offer nutrition series for whoever would like to join. So that's coming up in September 23rd. We're hoping to get a large number of people attending that event. And gearing up for a new school year starting October. We have a new fiscal year. We're getting ready to get into the schools. Thank you. Any questions?
You were, about 4 or 5 months ago or something is when you were, the teacher program or whatever. You know, it's interesting to know how many people, like you said, the Boys and Girls Club was good at 35 people. Just to, you know, how many people that you have interacted with or taught the classes or something like that. So it sounds like it's going well, and just curious about, you know, how many people you reach in. So.
You know, I think I will try to be here every month to give you updates based on food-wise. And my question to you is, what kind of information do you need on behalf of food-wise for me to provide? Number of people that we're reaching?
I think that's good. You know, it's good to see the, you know, just that we understand that there's a need. And that you're helping, being very helpful, and I was just curious. You know, my question was for Carolyn too. I thought about it after she was down. Was just how many students are in 4-H now, and so it's kind of the same thing with this. Is how many people are you touching,
serving,
and helping,
yes.
And serving? So.
Absolutely.
So.
Yes. Thank you for that.
563.
All right.
Well, in the horticulture world, so finally I was able to wrap up with my spongy moth case study. It's a huge problem in the far west part of the county. We were able to identify the epicenter of that infestation. It's on the County Road KD between Wilmot Avenue and the Bassett One. Nearly about 37 acres of trees have been completely defoliated. It's a stunning appearance. And so I did a lot of multiple aerial assessment in and around that area, stretching from the east side of the county to the west side of the county. So far, the infestation has been spread only in the far west, in Twin Lakes, town of Randall, in that area. And the scale, the magnitude of the infestation is quite alarming in the far west part. If we happen to have a dry spring again next year, we're going to see a massive outbreak throughout the western side of the county, and I won't be surprised even till infestation is going to extend even till Bristol. And but we were able to, you know, be more proactive right now. We were able to identify the epicenters and some of the outlier areas where the massive infestation has taken place. So that's one good news. But at the same time, the trees are having a baggage of stress from last 3 years. So we were able to take a growth assessment on all the borough trees from all the epicenter areas in that area. And the reports are very alarming. In 2021, the growth of the borough was only about 1.5 inches. And that's related to the extreme drought that we have. 2022, the growth of the borough is only an average about 2.5. And 2023, after we had this spongy moth, the homeowner was starting to water it. So the growth actually has been expanded to about 3.5. What does it mean actually? Say, normally a borough tree is considered as a slow growing to medium growing tree, which means a slow growing tree is less than 12 inches, medium means 24 inches, 12 to 24. This is extremely slow, and this is actually the impact of the drought stress. The trees are having this baggage. We took the data from about like a 7 different mature borok trees. We measured the growth. We did some analysis of that. So this is a significant thing because next year, if we do happen to have the spongy moth, we're going to see a decline of the oak trees. Already the oak trees in the current sites have been starting to decline. Some of the major branches have been starting to, have not expanded at all, has not fully defoliated at all, actually. So it's very alarming for many of the residents there because to cut up actually a branch about like an 8-inch one, it's going to cost about $1,000. To cut out a single tree, a mature tree, if it's dead, it's going to range from $2,000 to $5,000. Say this particular homeowner, who is also located in the epicenter, has about 25 boroks. They're not really healthy at all. Can you imagine the cost, actually?
Yeah.
And also the environmental impact that's going to have, because oaks are one of the most important species that supports about 300 to 400 different species of wildlife. So the environmental impact is also going to be huge. So this morning I did present a presentation to our county executive as well as to various department directors in the public works. So that's my final report that I gave you guys. So I'm going to be working with Joe Patente to release out a press statement coming up in the fall. So that's one major case study that I'm doing that I've finished right now. We'll see how it's going to go next year. I'll keep you guys posted. The second case study is about the Tree of Heaven project, which is an invasive species. Go ahead, sir.
No, I'm just saying that was the one you were talking about last time, right? The Tree of Heaven.
Yes.
So we got Tree of Heaven and we got spongy moth to deal with too. Okay.
And the Tree of Heaven, we were able to enter most of the points in the national database, in the invasive species database. So now I'm going to be working with the highway department, training the highway department staff how to use the YEDMAP, which is a national database, invasive species database. So I don't have to literally go and drive around and map all those things. Now I'm going to train the highway employees actually to do all those mapping on my behalf. And so once we get a pretty good understanding about the location of it, the next step would be about how do we eradicate this Tree of Heaven. So that'll be the next big step that we're going to take into this one. So that's another case study that I'm currently involved into it. So the third one is about a research study, a couple of research studies at the KCC here. One is actually the tree adaptation to the climate change. So we planted the tree in 2021. And we were able to take the measurement of it. I'll give you those reports next meeting. Still I'm analyzing some of those data. So it's almost done. I haven't printed it yet, but I'll keep you guys. So we did the measurements of all the 20 trees at the KCC, which we planted in 2020 to 2021. And what species are most successful? And what are some of the failures? So those data is almost done. So next month I'll be publishing those things. The antioxidant fruit trial study is also done. We collected some of the data back in early August. And so that report will be published by next month as well. So these are some of the research studies that I'm currently involved as well. In terms of my teaching, so last week I was able to host an invasive species workshop in partnership with the Southeast Wisconsin Invasive Species Group. And so we had one speaker from UWM, and we were able to host about 20 people joined in. We were able to use our KCC facility to demonstrate on cutting down some buckthorn, honeysuckles, those are some common invasive species, and what various techniques can be used for those things. And this coming week, in next couple of weeks, I'll be hosting an urban forestry workshop on pruning young trees. And this is going to be in partnership with DNR and with a couple of my extension colleagues. So we're going to host in 5 different locations in the state, Milwaukee, Wausau, Oshkosh, Waukesha County, as well as in Dane County as well, too. So that's it.
Okay, thanks, VJ. I called you, when was it, like in June or something, about the spongy moths. Remember I called you and I said, hey, there's a bunch of trees out here. It was, you know, when you finally got to see it, I'm sure you were like, oh my gosh. I don't know how many there are, but I thought it was at least 40 or 50 that they had in that whole area there.
So yeah.
I was glad to see that you guys took a look at that because I thought it was pretty stark as well.
It is. My guesstimate is that we would have at least about more than 50,000 caterpillars in the area.
Yeah. Right.
So how do you eradicate them? Is there some...
See, in the morning discussion, in that kind of outbreak area, we had a discussion about aerial application. And say our county executives are going to reach out to the Secretary of State to seek for some additional funding to spray in private area. Already that is about $10,000 seems to be invested in the proposed county budget to spray in one of the epicenter area, because the county parks department is planning on putting up a trail in that area right there. So as part of it, management, we are going to do that. So I'll keep you guys posted. But on a low to medium level infestation, there are some ways to manage it. I plan on writing an article as in an untimely manner. So for the fall, I'm going to write up an article along with Joe Potente's input to manage the egg mass, because each egg mass contains about 500 to 1,000 eggs in it. So in the epicenter area, on one specific, on about like a 20 feet radius, we measured about, like, we counted about like 124 egg masses of that. So multiply at least by 500. So that much of infestation we're going to have in the 20 feet radius. So.
And if you can address those areas and contain it, then it's to prevent it from getting widespread, then it saves a lot of time and effort.
That's going to save a lot of money for the county, because local residents can't handle the impact of it.
Right.
Treating one tree, either by systemic on a 40, 50 foot tree, it's going to cost a lot. One of the residents contacted a professional arborist, and he charged about like $4,000 or $5,000 to treat about like 20 trees in his property. Say, they're all stumbled. Either to cut down a tree is more economical, or to save the tree, inject the tree with some insecticide. So it's a communal issue.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
How do they respond to weather?
See, this is all dictated by the weather. Say the dry spraying and in mid spraying, when we have a dry weather, as well as early summer, we have a dry weather. That seems to be the perfect habitat, a perfect condition for the spongy moth explosion. So last 3 years, the weather condition seems to be more favorable. We didn't have enough rain. So 2021 drought is like a footing stepstone for that. And then in 2022, 2023, we didn't have enough rain, actually, that really aggravated, actually, the population of the spongy moth. So that's going to be the tricky thing, how the weather is going to be. If you're going to get actually a torrential rain, like almost every week we're going to get rain, then we're going to see a crash of the population. But we don't know. Yeah. This is the big mystery. So in case if we didn't get it, oh gosh, we're going to have a massive outbreak in that area.
Temperature?
Temperature is not. This is something I was explaining this morning. How the spongy moth actually, withstands this cold temperatures and stuff like that. In fact, right now at the egg mass stage, have you guys seen this movie called Prometheus?
No.
Anyone? An alien movie?
No.
Oh my God. They would have stole this idea from this spongy moth, I would say. See, this is very interesting. I mean, say these, once the spongy moth, the female lays her egg, they stay in the egg stage only for 1 month. And then the embryo develops inside to it. And this is very interesting. It doesn't hatch. It stays in a suspended animation stage from September till about like mid-May. I don't know what kind of miracle it has, like an antifreeze technique it has. So that's something our future NASA scientists may have to explore, because if you're going to travel like interstellar space, how do you actually put your human's body in a such kind of like a suspended stage, or have the human embryos, live for millions of years later? So this embryos, they actually stay in the suspended stage till like about like early to mid-May. And then exactly at mid-May, when the temperatures are hitting about 60 degrees, they all start to hatch.
Okay, so extreme cold doesn't have a deleterious effect.
Nothing.
They just winter right through it. As I saw, one of the areas on here is where my cabin's at, with a massive infestation, Marinette County. So
it's very bad in northern part of Wisconsin, like in Bayfield. So this is one of the worst year, according to the DNR, in the last, from 2000, we have about like a 373,000 acres of defoliation. So the last such kind of thing was like 353 back in 2010. So this is one of the highest record of defoliation in the history of Wisconsin.
Temperature doesn't hurt them. Rain is good. So
rain is amazing because the rain activates a fungal spore that infects actually this spongy moth. So if that's a lack of rain at the right time, that's the main cause for it.
Okay. We've had a similar issue with Japanese beetles. Wet summers, we have a larger infestation. Dry summers, lesser. So these two are opposites of each other. Yin and yang.
It's not one thing, it's another.
Right?
Yeah.
So, well, thanks, VJ. And?
I was going to say, Carolyn, do you have anything else you want to share? Well, I didn't know, like, date. Like, just wanted to make sure that you were able to share all your dates. And everything like that. Okay. I actually have a report from Pam Wade at Kirsch. Pam is a school readiness and family resiliency educator, and she's primarily located in Racine. However, she does do some work in Kenosha. So she provided me a report, and she said that she'll report on a more regular basis. So what Pam has been doing here in Kenosha County, she attended Open House at Epsola to share information on virtual parenting education and making Reading Memories program for children who have a parent at the Kenosha County Detention Center. She's also piloting a virtual parenting program, which are 10 1.5-hour sessions. It's Parenting Inside Out, the Literacy Link at the Kenosha County Detention Center. And then parents learned strategies to strengthen the relationships and foster social emotional skills with their children. This effort is designed to increase parental involvement and confidence to improve outcomes for children and families impacted by parental incarceration. So she's working with justice-involved families. So that's what Pam has been up to. And then just some updates as far as educator positions. We conducted virtual first interviews for the positive youth development educator position. So Erica's the position that Erica vacated. And so we are going to be conducting second interviews next Friday, so the 22nd. So hopefully, but, you know, by next month, I'll be able to give you, I know it's budget, but I can also just give you a quick update of who we hire. So we have that. The ag
educator. So youth educator, you said, right?
Yep, so that'd be the youth development.
Are you looking to have them on, the person on board?
We're hoping by, if all goes well next Friday, then we still have to do the reference checks and all of that, and then they would have to give their 2-week notice. So the goal is the first week of October, definitely by the second week. It all just depends on what kind of notice they have to give their employer.
Okay.
So it's probably more realistically the second week of October.
Okay, so who is there an interim person that's kind of helping in that area or no?
In fact, I have a Youth as Resources meeting on Tuesday evening, so yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yep. And I'm the contact person for Youth and Governance, like if anyone would have any questions for that program as well.
All right.
Yeah, and that's, as we know, well underway, so that's not as much of a concern, but yep.
So you're motivated to get somebody on board, aren't you?
Right?
Correct.
Lots of juggling right now.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but that was your background before you became
it was.
Director, right?
So, yes.
So it's well within your wheelhouse.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. It's just the Youth as Resources program in Racine County was actually run by the United Way. We're here. We oversee it. So, but nonetheless, you're right, youth development, it's in my wheelhouse, so it's all good. And then the ag educator position, as we know, was a failed search. So what we've done is we're getting a little creative, although I hear this has happened before, and we are actually going to post with Dane County. They will get their educator, we will get ours, but the Institute has found in the past that when they've done this pooling, they've actually attracted more candidates. So we will see and hope that that works for us and that this time we'll get more applications and a larger, stronger pool from which to interview candidates. So.
So you're just advertising with Dane County, or are you looking to combine the position with them?
I'm going to go yes and no, in the sense like it's still going to be separated, right? They have their educator, we have ours, but there will be an opportunity for collaboration because there'll be similar positions. And so there is always that as well. And we find with extension that that happens almost naturally, like that there's a similar position or will be in Milwaukee. They had theirs, but the person has left the organization. So once they're hired too, so there is that as well. But in the end, they will have theirs, we will have ours. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. As far as food-wise, we did have our nutrition educator start last month, so that's exciting, Cassandra. So happy to have her on board, and right now she's been doing some shadowing. And then Jill, who was a nutrition educator, is now the teaching coordinator, and she started last month as well. So that's been exciting to have them both on board. And we have started, and Mary, thank you very much for being on the committee, our professional development day is an area we like to come together and either once or twice a year and spend time with one another, because we're split among three offices right now. We have the one in downtown Racine where Foodwise is, with Ness and all of our Foodwise colleagues, and then of course Racine County and here in Kenosha. So we're looking to have that on October 27th, and so we're excited about that and that planning process. And then finally, we have been working on our civil rights audit, because that is something that is coming up for us on December 4th here. So I'm just gathering the documents of how the outreach we've done to underserved audiences and protected audiences as well. So it's just an opportunity to make sure that we're in compliance with all that we do here in the county. So those are the updates for me.
All right, I don't have anything else. Any other questions from the committee? Youth and governance. You guys are quiet tonight. School got you wore out? So, well, I think that pretty much wraps up everything I've got, so we're done a few minutes early. Kind of more like how it should be, right? Other than running to the end. So, and the only other thing that I just wanted to put for the recording, I think the full committee's here and both meetings are here as well. Mm-hmm. So, as far as attendance goes. So, that's good. All right.
And then it's my understanding next month I meet with all of you, right, when we do budget? Yeah.
I think that's how I remember it.
Okay.
So,
yeah. All right.
So, you got a little bit of a lift then.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, all right.
Sounds good.
Well, sounds good. That's a wrap.
Thank you.
All right. Let's get over to the next one at 7 o'clock here. Thank you all for coming. Nice to meet you, Savannah.
I thought you had said that
you were meeting in here. Has that changed?
Oh, I didn't hear.
Okay. And that we're supposed to leave the TV and that you are staying here.
Oh, okay.